Jack Ward, who's organising this session, asked me if I'd give a little bit of an update on the National Beef Cattle Evaluation Consortium projects that we've been going, that are underway, and talk a little bit about what's happened with markers. So for those of you who are not aware, the National Beef Cattle Evaluation Consortium was a USDA special grant. It was a grant that was made to Cornell, and varied, I think at its peak it was up to something like $800,000 a year went to Cornell, and Cornell distributed it to various consortium partners to do certain activities associated with genetic evaluation. The consortium no longer exists in the sense of a funded project. When the special grants disappeared, the official title of a project called the consortium disappeared. But the consortium has a lot of industry impact, has a lot of visibility, had a lot of partners that were working together on things. So the consortium is still very much alive and well, but it's a consortium of like-minded people. It involves a number of federally funded projects, and one of those is the feed efficiency project, which Jerry talked about earlier. The outreach extension component of the efficiency project very much involved a project that the consortium had been running known as the Weight Track project. So I'm not going to talk anymore. You've already heard from Jerry about the heritabilities and about the QTL work that's gone on the feed efficiency project. One of the other projects that the consortium has been involved in is based on bioinformatics, really about methods for using marker information to predict merit. And there have been several different grants on that particular topic. There's been one that Jack Deck has led, which was on using low-density SNP chips to predict performance based on high-density SNP chips. And a lot of the work that was done on that was actually done with a 384 SNP chip. So we genotyped animals with 384 SNP chip, and then we imputed up to a higher density and into genomic prediction on those. And it worked very well, but we were able to get away with a very low density chip because both of the parents were genotyped at high density. So it wasn't the case we have typically in beef cattle where we only have, say, males done at high density. Another one was involved in developing genomic methods to take SNP data and develop prediction equations. And that's one that I'm going to talk about some of the results of that a little bit more. So the consortium mission, which really developed in the pre-genomic era through John Pollock and Bruce Golden's effort, was to develop and implement improved predictions so selection can enhance economic viability of US beef cattle producers. And early on, we had some projects to do with things like multi-breed evaluation. We took data sets from many breed associations and put them together to come up with, we had a vision that maybe we could have a single evaluation for all the breeds in the US. But for various reasons, it was hard to make that happen. Although we ran prototypes of it, when you only had year-to-year funding, the breed associations were a bit uncomfortable committing when they never quite knew whether you'd have any dollars to carry it through the next year. So although we developed a prototype and showed it could happen, and we showed all of the problems, which were mostly about reconciling IDs between one breed association and another when the same bull was used in different breeds, most typically an Angus bull, we showed those kind of problems. None of those things have yet been entirely resolved. But the mission is still there, and most of the activity we're doing about the mission now is about genomic prediction rather than the other kinds of predictions. So to just tell you where the status of this is, here is a list of breed associations. The one breed association that I don't have listed on there is the American Angus Association. And the American Angus Association is a little bit different because it has genomic predictions that came from Pfizer and it has genomic predictions that came from Mariella Igenity. And we actually worked with both of those companies to help develop the predictions. Pfizer actually used the software we developed as the project. They used it in-house. Mariella Igenity used it with our help in our operation to generate the markers that we used in that prediction. What I want to talk to you about here are the other breed associations outside of Angus who have based their predictions on a different kind of a model. So the Angus model, when it came along, was developed at a time when there was a feeling that if you invested in genomic prediction training data sets, you could keep that information proprietary. You'd hold it to yourself, either in the case of Pfizer or Merial. You'd develop a prediction equation which you would then sell, and eventually you would get back enough profit that paid for the development of the training population. And the hope was that that investment would be enough that the prediction would work across all breeds. And that turned out not to be the case. The way the operation worked was that a hair sample went to Angus. It was anonymously barcoded and sent on to the genotyping company, so they didn't know who the bull was. They saw the genotypes, they came up with a prediction, and they sent the prediction back to the breed association. So the breed association didn't get the genotypes, and the company didn't get the information on the animal. So every animal that was genotyped, it was not an investment in improved prediction. The other breed association said, we don't like that model. And the first one that came along to us was Hereford, and said, can we do a genomic prediction directly with you, where we own the genotypes, we collect the genotypes on the database, and we have some control over where this goes, and we don't mind doing some investment. So Hereford, that was the number one. So they are now up and operational. So a Hereford breeder can send a hair sample in, and they can get a genomic prediction, they get back the raw genotypes, and they can put that into their evaluation. Simmental Association likewise did the same thing. They were a bit slower getting started, but they, the moment they got into it, they sent in a wealth of information. The Limousin Foundation was another one that got involved, and they largely got involved because they had a whole lot of data sitting in Jerry Taylor's lab from some other study, and they thought that if they were doing something with Angus, maybe doing something on the continental side would be interesting. When Merial Longevity was bought by Neogen, those genotypes were made available to us, so we were able to get them up and running. Most recently, we've got Red Angus up and running. There are two that are near operational, American Gelpie and Maine on June. And when I say near operational, we have genomic predictions ready, but it's just a matter of getting the other pieces of the pipeline so they can get them incorporated in their EBDs and out there. And there's two other breeding associations that we're currently actively building training populations on. One is the Brangus Breeders, and the other is the International Charolais Association. And so they have budgets for generating data sets, and they're putting animals in on a regular basis. And the last one I mentioned there is the Canadian contributions. So Genome Canada had a project that was funded jointly at Edmonton and Guelph. But if you were to look at the way their project operates today, you probably wouldn't have designed it the way they did, but they designed it in a politically correct way, which meant that they had, I think, 8,000 animals, but it was spread over a number of different breeds. And what we know today is the number they did in any one breed was actually not sufficient to give a good training population. And they included a lot of sequencing. Jerry mentioned that today. They've actually sequenced 300 bulls, relatively low depth, as part of the 1,000 bull genome project that Ben Hayes is involved in. That data is in there. It's actually the bulk of the 1,000 genomes data now is that Canadian data. So they've done a lot of sequencing, but they've been a little bit weak on the genotyping side. And so what we've seen happening is, as these US breed associations have started operating, the Canadian partners have said, can we share the genotypes? Can we put it together and have an evaluation that will work both in Canada and the US? And that makes a lot of sense because a lot of the evaluations are done jointly between the Canadian and the US partners. So these numbers change all the time, but as of about 10 days ago or so, this was the number of records that I had from the major breeds of 50K data. And it comes from a number of sources. It comes from a number of different owners. Some of this comes from 2,000 bull data that US Mark did, and they didn't give them to me. They gave them to the breed associations, and the breed associations shared them back to me for their evaluations. Some of them come from research projects, like the Feed Efficiency Project, where particular animals have been genotyped. But here I'm only counting animals with 50K genotypes. Some of them come from, say, the Iowa State Herd in the case of Aberdeen Angus. Some of the data came from Igenity, so when GeneSeq purchased Igenity, they had a lot of genotypes available, and they said, if you're helping predictions that are going through the GeneSeq system, you're welcome to use the 50K genotype that we have. So we've got a lot of data that have come, including data on Carcass Merit project animals from a number of breeds there. So you see we're up to 5,500 now for Hereford, over 11,000 for Aberdeen Angus, although some of those Aberdeen Angus are animals that have come through performance gestation. They're not necessarily all pedigree breed association recorded animals. And there are many others that I don't have in the accounts where they actually have HD700, where they have LD data, and by LD it varies, mostly Illumina 7K or Illumina 9K. The most recent GGP LD data, which is 20K or 19K, and the GGP HD, which is 70K, and then there's also a huge amount of Vos indicus data, and most of that data is on the 700K chip. So what's the predictive ability like if you look at the kind of graphs that Ben Hayes and Mike Butler and others have published over the years about predictive ability? One of the big determinants of predictive ability is how many animals you have in your training population. And they thought that some of the other things that mattered were effective population size and linkage disequilibrium. We now know actually these predictions have got nothing to do with linkage disequilibrium. We can have zero linkage disequilibrium and we can still get predictions just like these ones here. The predictions are actually driven a lot by relationships and by co-segregation. And you can have co-segregation even when you have no linkage disequilibrium. But we do get the kind of result that they showed, which is that as you get more animals, the accuracy goes up. So here is the 2010 predictions we did for the American Hereford Association based on 800 animals. Many of them were from Miles City in Montana, so some of them were actually cows. Some others of them were from the 2000 Bulls Project, and a few of them were from the breed association themselves. And you can see the correlations in the 0.2 to 0.4, average 0.33, so they accounted for 11% of the genetic variance. And people always say, how many samples do you need to get a good prediction? And it's always been my kind of gut feeling that the line in the sand has been something like 1,000 animals. If you've got something like 1,000 animals, then these numbers are positive. With less than 1,000 animals, we can sometimes see negative numbers here. So I've said you really need to aim at getting 1,000. So they pushed up to 1,000, and as you can see, our predictive ability went up a bit to 0.37, 13% of the genetic variance. And at that point, we were ready to release genomic predictions for the Hereford Association. Unfortunately, the Hereford Association had an exclusive genotyping arrangement with a company based on microsatellites that would have been contravened if they started doing SNP genotyping. So they weren't able to move, so they sat on that number of samples for quite a long time. And I really wanted to push that number up, because I knew it would improve the accuracy, since many of these animals were those line one animals. I would like to have seen more bulls done. And as it so happened, GeneSeq had a whole lot of 50K chips that were coming up to their expiry date, so they dropped the price to $60, $60 a sample from here if you did 1,000 samples. So a number of breed associations took the opportunity to push up their training data sets, and Hereford was one of them that did exactly that. So $60 for each animal, and I had told them that based on all of the analyses we've done, your predictions will be much better if you have close relatives in the training set. So any breeder who is anticipating using this technology, if the natural mating size and brand size they've used or in their herd are in this data set, that would help enormously. So what the Hereford Association decided to do was form a research foundation and subsidise the cost of this genotyping. So they created this charitable organisation. They got their members to donate things to it, and some of them donated embryos, some of them donated heifers and straws of semen and so on. The more interesting one, John, were some fishing trips and some pheasant hunting trips. So I had to make a donation to their foundation, which got me up to South Dakota pheasant shooting last season. But they subsidised the cost then for every breeder. I just don't remember how much they subsidised it, but it was enough that it was sort of inconsequential for people to put in the data on those herd sites. And that's what saw this big jump to get us up to closer to 3,000. And as a result of that, you can see our correlation's gone up a bit, but the really nice thing, if you look at the percent of variance we've accounted for, it's doubled. And I was asked to a meeting in Tennessee to talk to some Hereford breeders. I went to this meeting and came along, I think there's probably 25 people there, and every one of them in the audience had done a 50K. Most of them had no idea actually what that meant. But they had gone out and they pulled some hair samples and they were part of this project and they wanted to know. So there's a whole lot of excitement going on with Hereford, and we've already jumped up the numbers a whole lot. So the data needs to get blended, and the blending is still a little bit of a problem. But just to show you the impact on accuracy, so the genetic correlation, the highest of the ones we're getting there in Hereford, around that 0.6, so accounting for about 40% of the variance. What I'd say on average was at 33. So this shows you the increase in BIF accuracy when you blend the genomic information with whatever comes out of national evaluation. And of course, as we've always been saying, these high accuracy bulls are not going to change as a result of having a genomic prediction. The low ones are. And that's why it was important for the foundation to be subsidising the genotype of those ones, because they're critical to make it more accurate for everybody. But whoever paid for that animal being done was not going to directly see the benefit. Now, these numbers kind of change all the time, because almost on a weekly basis we're getting more data from various associations and rerunning the analyses. But this is a summary of the 50K predictive abilities that we've run for each of these breed associations. And here in brackets, I have the size of the training data set that we use for these particular correlations. So this is the training data set size. It's not the size of the number of animals necessarily in that breed, because Red Angus, this is more than the numbers I showed you before for Red Angus, but the Red Angus Association allows Black Angus bulls to be used. And because of our agreement with GeneSeq, if we had a 50K genotype on a Black Angus bull and we had a progeny test data on that Black Angus bull in the Red Angus data set, we could use that 50K genotype to improve the prediction. So we had 6,500 there. So the Black Angus data we're using here is not from the American Angus Association EPD. It's the Red Angus EPD on the Black Angus bull from progeny recorded in the Red Angus Association. Okay, so that's the best one. You can see there we're getting correlations up as high as 0.75, 0.9 for fat. I'm not sure if I'd quite believe that, 0.85 for Marlin, but that's what we see. Angus at 3,500. We are due soon to do a total rerun of the Angus animals, but I have an expectation that we're about to be funded from the Iowa State Government to finish the genotyping of the whole Iowa State herd, so we'll have done every cow and every bull and all the calf crops and include the sequencing and number of bulls. So we'll rerun this again soon and we should have a big increase in numbers, so I'm hoping those accuracies will go up. Hereford at about 3,000, Simmental at 2,800. The Simmental predictions that we're using that are on the GeneSeq system actually use a lot more animals than this, because what we found is if we join together data from different breed associations, we can get the same or better predictions. And so I'll show you in a moment about those. Limousin at 2,400 and Gilt be sitting around about 1,200. We actually have quite a lot more than that, mostly recently from Canada, and we, meaning my postdoc Marty Sarchi, will be rerunning those in the next week or two, and we'll have updates on those. So one of the problems we have for a breed association like Simmental that actually does the analysis for Red Angus and Gilt and has a lot of composite people, John and Dick at Cornell developed this multi-breed evaluation very early on, is it's a little bit hard for them to administer a whole lot of different prediction equations. So one of the things that we wondered about was what would happen we predicted Simintool using only Simintool, or what would happen if we predicted Simintool but we dumped Red Angus and Angus and all the other things into the training data set. And what we see is typically is what you see here. Some cases the correlations hardly change at all. In other cases the correlations go up a little bit. So that's generally what we do. But we do all this validation very carefully. So we validate, say, with Simintool alone. All our validation is done with what we call K-fold validation. So we take the Simintool data, the real Simintool animals, we separate them into groups based on relatedness, we leave one group out, we predict that missing group, and we do that successively around each of the groups, and then we repeat that same exercise where we add all of the other breeds into the run. So these are genetic correlations that come from those independent validations. And the one time when we don't see this happening, and where a bunch of the traits go down a whole lot, is when we merge together Limousin data with Angus data. And the Limousin Association, like many of them, have a kind of an Angus crossbred operation. So they have a LimFlex, which is an Angus Limousin. So when we use Limousin data from real Limousins, and we include LimFlex data, and we include any Angus animals with Angus 50K who have progeny test data creating these LimFlex, we get an erosion of accuracy. And when we look at where the QTL are for those traits in that analysis, a whole lot of them sit right over the top of the F94 myostat mutation. So we are suspicious that the problem we're getting with Limousin and not anywhere else is because of that myostat mutation. So Jerry, one of his people, kindly pulled out all the DNA from the freezers on those 2,500, 3,000 Limousin animals. They've sent them to GeneSeq, who are very kindly going to run the F94 mutation on all of those animals, and then we'll rerun the analyses where we actually include the causal myostatin along with everything else in the 50K, and we're hoping that that will solve this problem with the Limousin. If that's the case, we may even be able to add the Limousin and Simintool and everything else all up together and have a single prediction equation. Now, one of the things when John was leading the consortium was we were trying to get a better distinction between doing research and doing servicing. And in the old days when Mangrant universities did a lot of EPD calculations, the research part was fun, but the servicing part, having to generate these evaluations, was not. And in the early years of the consortium, when we were funded by the special grant, we did very successfully move that servicing role out to the breed associations. So when genomics came along, the last thing that we wanted to do was end up being back in a servicing role. So what we've been very careful about is as we've developed the software to work out how to do these predictions, from a research point of view, we wanted to give the servicing to somebody else. And what GeneSeq, since they are the ones that are generating the genotypes, have kindly made available is a computer system that allows them to run on their site, so the same site where you get the data back. So they happen to run Microsoft Windows kind of machines. We don't really like Microsoft Windows kind of machines, so we run a virtual machine on one of their servers. We install all the software on. We have all the prediction equations sitting there. As soon as the data comes off the GeneSeq, the normal final report files that have the genotypes in AB format, they can run a one-line command line which reformats the files appropriately, imputes all the missing SNP genotypes, runs the prediction equation, and generates a CSV file that has the MVBs. And then that is put on the breed association website. So when the breed association gets the email to say the genotypes are there, and they go to download them, the CSV file that has a row for each animal and a column for each trait that has the molecular prediction and has an accuracy of the molecular prediction is there. So when I'm here at a VIF meeting like this, those predictions are going ahead, and all I get is the email saying there's more genotypes there for me to download. And hardly a week goes past now where I don't have a whole lot more genotypes to add into our pipeline for these research analyses. So we've shown early on that you can't predict a crossbreed, but nevertheless, when a breed association chart starts showing some interest in prediction, like we had most recently from Shorthorn. They said, we're kind of interested in this. Can you tell us what might happen? We had about 400 animals. They sent us the data on these animals. The first two columns are actually with colour and horns. So just out of interest, I said to Marty, the postdoc, I said, why don't you just run an analysis on horn pole as a 1-2 and the colour as a white roan, red as a 1-2-3. And he ran that and came back a few minutes later and said, you know, there it was. Our window variance, 97% of the variance for coat colour sat right on top of the kit ligand locus. And it was the horn one wasn't quite so good. It was spread over about 2 centimorgans around on top of where the pole locus is. So it is amazing that these tasks that were a decade or more work in the past with this high density data, we can just run it like that and get the answer. So this is prediction from other breeds. So Marty took our prediction equations from each of these breeds and predicted the Shorthorns, and you can see in most cases it's either negative or zero. There are a couple Red Angus and Hereford where we get slightly better prediction than birth weight, but just like we've said to everybody else, if you want to be involved in this task, you really have to get that 1,000 animals, and then we can do predictions on your animals themselves. Now, the other thing that's happened is a bit lot of changing in genotyping panels. So these are the Illumina products, the 770K, the 50K, multiple versions, that's version 2, and the 3K, which Illumina came out with, which was the one the dairy we're using for low-density genotyping. The problem with those chips, although their accuracy was pretty good, their reliability was pretty good, was that if you had some genes you were interested in, like a defect, they weren't on the chip, and so you had the problem of having to genotype things twice. So Illumina came up with the option of putting custom content on these panels, and they actually made it pretty cost-effective. So GeneSeq has ended up generating some of these. They call them GGP, GeneSeq Genomic Profilers. The one that they call LD, or it's sometimes called Super LD, and this is the one that we're doing LD stuff now, we're using. It has a bit over 19,000 of open content, and then it also has custom content on it. In addition to that, for consortium members, it costs $45 from the ESR, which includes all the parentage markers and all of the other defects. And because of the volumes that they run these things, I think they are using something like 10,000 a month in the dairy industry alone. They buy as few as they can to get the cheapest price for them. As soon as they run out of chips, they're going to remanufacture it. So we have the opportunity to add content or remove content each time it happens. So unlike the 50K chip that's been kind of static for a few years, I think we're going to see a circumstance where now we're getting much more rapid evolution of these chips. And the 20K here, which we're running in some cases now, just a few months ago, that was a 10K chip. And not long before that, it was a 7K chip, all at the same price. So maybe what we're going to see happening is not so much that this price is going to go down a whole lot, but that the number of SNPs in here is going to gradually creep up.